Well, once again, remember here, as we're looking through the book of Hebrews, we are reading a book that was written to the Jewish believers who had come to Christ out of Judaism. And all the explanations there of how Christ is the fulfillment of all of the things in the Old Testament and the necessity of those things, and how that these people, as they had come to Christ, as wonderful as it was to become God's children and have faith in Christ and to be growing, they were also, though, people that were going through a lot of struggles. They were undergoing some very, very difficult times, born and raised in Judaism, now having effectively rejected Judaism, for Christianity is the fulfillment of Judaism. They were being persecuted. They were going through a lot of trials and a lot of struggles, and because of the people that they had now essentially walked away from, who were now, you know, trying to pull them back into Judaism, and who had now actually given them some great trials as well in their life because they had walked away from it. Back in chapter 10 in verse 32 and 3, he says there, it reminds them of the former days. He says, when after being enlightened, after you'd come to Christ, you endured a great affliction of sufferings, partly being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers of those who were so treated. But here, the writer of Hebrews says, you know, when you came to Christ, you entered some trials. When you became enlightened to Christ, you has suffered some great affliction and some great suffering. Some of the trials were social, were relational, were with family. Some of them were economic. Some had even been imprisoned, they're told as well in chapter 10 about it. But all of them were in some form or another seemingly of pressure. And there were some of them even almost wanting to give in to it. Just say, you know, I didn't know this is worth it. All of this, and maybe we just ought to go back to Judaism, back to the old ceremonial law and these other things of the Old Testament. And these trials had no doubt caused some believers to wonder why. God wasn't giving them a greater victory in these things. Why God, with all of his power and all of his capacity to do anything he wanted, why was he allowing them to suffer and doing seemingly nothing about it? Well, he attempted to answer some of those questions and struggles in chapter 11 when he told them that those struggles were the very things that refined their forefathers, that purified, that strengthened, that increased the faith of their fathers, and that made them such phenomenal men and women of God in the old covenant anyway. And that now he leads into an exhortation for them to be strong as well and to receive the discipline that they need in their lives as well. And he gives us this exhortation. And he reminds them as well of a couple of things there, that the saints of the old covenant, they knew very, very well what it was to suffer. They faced warfare, weaknesses of all sorts of ways, and beatings, imprisonment, stoning, destitution, all sorts of afflictions, and just because of their trust in the Lord. This was not a new thing, these trials that they had. And not only that, it was also something that now he goes on to tell them, but now you are to be able to go through this, and as you do it, be looking unto Jesus, somebody they really couldn't even see like you can see. You're to be looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despised the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And here as he's telling them, there he reminds them now here in verse 3, he says, therefore, consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and you become discouraged in your souls. He realized there, the writer, he said, I know sometimes when you're wanting to grow and you're truly committing your life and commending, you know, your walk to God, wanting to be very sincere about it, there will be times in your life that you'll become discouraged. You'll become weary. It's a part of the aspect of a disciplined life. And anybody who knows any sense of discipline knows that. Anything at all worth anything in this life, it always comes with some measure of discipline. I don't care whether you want to be an athlete, you want to be a musician, you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or something, whatever career it is that somebody may have, the better they're at it, the harder the discipline there was. when somebody there wants to be an athlete and everybody else is school's out, I'm going off and there's a party going on and you're out there, you know, you're working out, you're in the gym, you're training, you're buffeting your body, you're disciplining your body, you're bringing it in subjection there to realizing there that you want to go out on that field and you want to perform and you want to perform well. And the reward of discipline is what you are looking for, so you discipline yourself. When everybody else is going off and, hey, let's go do something, but you're up burning the midnight oil and you're learning, you know, biology or chemistry or whatever else it is and studying these things, you know, so that you can know medicine. And while the other people are off saying, hey, you don't, I'm just going to be a drug dealer, you know, you can prescribe them as they ought to, but hey, I know a shortcut to it and I can be very successful. We'll both deal in drugs. You'll just be smarter than me. But some people, but the one who disciplines themselves and gives themselves, you know, and puts themselves in under the disciplines of life is the one that reaps the reward of it. Well, so also in the Christian life. When there is somebody there that they really say, I want the greatest life experience I can have. I want to have the most wonderful experience on this planet that there can be afforded to a human being. And he says, well, then you've got to know what it is to be disciplined by God. To look there within your heart and within your life. And he says, I know with a person, anybody that does this, just like the athlete or the student or whatever else that gives themselves to some higher degree of training and discipline, they will have times where they're weary. They'll have times where it says here that they could be discouraged and soul. They say, is this worth it? I'm tired. I'm going to go to bed. I don't need this. And all these things, but when they overcome that with the discipline to say, no, I want it, one day they'll reap the reward of it. They'll have that, and they'll be that, you know, the athlete maybe that they want to be. They'll be that, you know, musician. They'll be that doctor. They'll be that lawyer or whatever else it is, if you want to be a lawyer. But the nothing. Actually, I was just doing a conference this weekend, and the pastor, biggest paradox in the world, the pastor of the church where I'm doing it, he's a lawyer. I said, you're a Christian and a lawyer? He said, yes. I said, that's amazing. I was quite impressed. Then I'm just kidding, but kind of. But anyway, we slept in the same room where we're at this conference, and it was a neat men's conference we're at. But I woke up the next morning, I'm thinking, this is the most humbling night of my entire life. And he says, why? And I said, well, to tell you the truth, I spent my whole life thinking that lawyers were the lowest thing in the world, and here I slept under a lawyer all night. He was on the upper bunk. But anyway, God humbled me tremendously. But the disciplines of life, when we know what it is to want to achieve something, by all you godly Christian lawyers, I don't know if there's all, many, some. God, what am I going this morning? I got to wake up. But anyway. But the disciplines, that's what I'm talking about, discipline, in a very undisciplined way. I did not do this first service. But anyway, but the disciplines of life, when we realize there that I want them. The word discipline in this section of Scripture we just read, it's repeated 9 times. Discipline, 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 over and over. He is telling them, you want to achieve something? And he says, then the disciplines of life have got to become a part of your life. And it's very, very important. And here he gives us in this section 3 things, 3 aspects of discipline. He's going to tell us the purpose of discipline, first of all. And the discipline honestly has a purpose. We should all know that, but he reminds us here. In verse 5, he says, and you've forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. Here he tells us, he says, discipline has a purpose there in life. He says, and don't ever forget that. Realize there, all of the saints of old, there was a great purpose when God disciplined them. And he says, have you forgotten the disciplines that God gave them? When you look at all of these Old Testament saints, the things that they essentially, you know, had gone through, and he went through chapter 11, and all of these things are the disciplines that they had to go through. He says, have you forgotten these things? Do you have you forgotten that God cannot be pleased with anything less than faith and a trust in Him? And God disciplined them to hone their faith, to deepen their faith, to strengthen their faith, to bring them out of this realm of just human thinking and feeling into a dimension of life where their entire life had been disciplined by faith. I want to live and walk and talk and breathe and live and love and care by faith. I want it to be the powerful aspect of life and the struggles and the disciplines they went through. God's choicest saints suffered many disciplines. And he says, don't forget that. And wanted to remind them, so you know, that they're the suffering. There's nothing new about it, essentially. It isn't new to you. It's not new to me. It's gone through God's saints of old. And being disciplined by God is not new. At all. God has been disciplining people forever because they're his sons. But he tells him, he says, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. And here the writer of Hebrews tells us in discipline, there's two things that can happen when discipline is being applied that will ruin its effectiveness. That there's two things that when somebody is disciplining somebody else, that if the person that is being disciplined allows either of these two things to happen, forget it. Discipline will not work. An exhortation there, ways that you can learn nothing through discipline, and yet you can go through it. Many people, they repeat discipline over and over and over again. They go through the same supposed lessons, but there's two things that happen to them that remove the ability to learn. In discipline, and so they just have to repeat it. And the first thing he tells him, he says, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. The first thing he says, there is many people, when they are being disciplined, they regard it lightly. That is, there is something there that they that when the discipline comes, something they're sent by God for their good, like hopefully even any parent, as he goes on in the text, when a parent takes his son aside and he disciplines him, he wants to tell him there is a message there that I've got to give you. There's something I want to achieve. May hold their face and say, look, this is what has happened, and this is what you got to do, and this is where you're wrong. It is for your good. But if when the discipline comes, you regard it lightly, it will not work. A lot of people, what happens when they're being disciplined is they regard heavily the experience, you know, that they are actually going through, and they regard lightly the message that they're trying to be taught. In the sense, they'll be going through something, and all they know is they weigh heavily the experience, the trial, the problem. I'm being spanked. It hurts. I don't like being spanked. This is terrible. And rather than being able to emphasize, no, what is the message you're trying to communicate when you're disciplining me? When I am being spanked, how many times as parents do you look at your child and when you discipline, you realize they are regarding it lightly, even though their tears and their pain, you know, but they are regarding heavily, you know, the pain, heavily the spanking. But you realize they didn't learn anything. They did not get the message. There isn't something where they say, right, I got it. You know, I didn't hear it when you said it, but when I felt it, I understood it now. You know, you don't want me to do this. Bingo. I've got to stop doing that. Is that what you're trying to tell me through this pain? Yes. But if people don't get that and they just walk away and says, they're just mad at the situation. I'm mad Johnny told on me and got me in trouble and I got a spanking. And they regard lightly the lesson, heavily the trial. How many people they go through repeatedly through the years? Marriage problems, marriage problems, marriage problems. It's that woman. There's so much tension in the home. That woman thou gavest me. Where did I get this woman? There's so much tension. There's heartache. There's hostility. And there's this constant discipline and sense of pain and struggle rather than ever stopping and saying, God, are you trying to tell me something through this woman? No, that couldn't be. You know, it's the woman or it's the job. It's that boss. This is not fair. This is not right. The way they treat you, you can't treat people that way. And so God disciplines us through the wife, disciplines through the marriage, through the children, through the job. There's pain. There's discipline. There's struggle. But rather there than listening and stopping and saying, God, is there something you're trying to teach me that I can grow, that I can hear, that I can change my behavior, my thoughts? my relationship. I can develop as a human being and I can mature in this. Struggle in the home, struggle at the office, struggle with the finances, struggle with whatever else it is. And so often, many people, they take the discipline lightly. They regard it lightly. They miss the message. And thus, they're going through it again and again and again. How many times do we, rather than really stopping and regarding it heavily or as we ought to, and yet they can go through a very difficult time and learn nothing. And sometimes they can even, not only that, they can even harden themselves to it. Another thing that can happen when somebody does repeatedly get disciplined, they repeatedly get things, they'll actually, first they can start off just, you know, regarding it lightly, and then they can actually get hardened to it and just say, I hate this job. I hate this woman. I hate this man. I hate these children. I hate whatever else it is that's causing this pain in my life. And they can get hardened to it and blame God and all sorts of things. I wonder right now how many with, you know, when you look at the things, hundreds of thousands of people have just gone through with these hurricanes. Lost, you know, their homes, lost everything they own, all lost their jobs, lost their children's schools, lost all of this. And what a painful thing to go through. I wonder how many of them are either angry and they're callous and upset. And I want to know how this, why, and this is what, and they're looking at people. It's the government, it's the mayor, it's the governor, you know, or the president, or it's this commissioner, where were this, or where were that, and everything's everybody else's fault, rather than sitting there saying, God, is there something through the issues of life that you can teach me that's going to make me better and stronger, deepen my faith, enrichen my experience with you? That's a person there that's learning the right sort of a thing. And then another thing can happen if we regard discipline lightly, we'll get careless, in the sense that we'll find ourselves there, you know, where we just lose care. We can have enough, you know, God will discipline us. Anybody, when you get married, you'll go through disciplines. You don't realize how selfish you are till you get married, do you? You know, I mean, all of a sudden there's somebody else there, you know, who shares the same refrigerator, same thermostat, same house, same clock, same everything. And I thought I was a very nice, wonderful Christian till I got married. You know, and I didn't think I was selfish at all till I got married. And then all of a sudden, there's this woman in the way, you know, of all the time, every day, it seemingly. And how God uses these things to show me, Don, there's nothing wrong with her. You're just extremely selfish. The world does not revolve around you. Do you know what it is to care for her? Know what she's going through? No. You know, but then you either you learn to respond to that or you'll get careless. One day, you know, I mean, you'll have struggles in the marriage. She'll say stuff to you like that hurt. Well, so, you know, or whatever, you know, you'll just either you'll respond and you'll learn something, or you'll get hostile, or you'll get angry, or you'll get judgmental. And then if you repeat it over a period of time within a certain period of time, oh, one day you don't care anymore. You will not, because you do not regard the chastening of discipline and regard it lightly. The next thing you know, you'll look at marriage and say, you know, so I didn't care anymore. I don't care for this woman. I don't care for this marriage. I don't care for these children. I don't care for this job. I don't care for anything. You actually are so callous and hardened instead of somebody there that literally knows what it is to regard discipline. The discipline comes, their ears open up, and they say, God, what are you wanting to teach me in this discipline, in this struggle? That's the person that's always going to come out the better because of it. Or a second thing that can happen is he tells them, secondly, he says, "He with discipline, you can either... regard it lightly," or he says, "nor faint when you are reproved by him." Here in the issues of life, I mean, God never spanks anybody directly, never disciplines anybody directly. He does it through the issues of life, doesn't he? He does it in our relationships. He does it in our career. He does it with our health. He does it with our finances. He does it in marriage and with the children. And here, when somebody is going through these things, God's reproving them. He's disciplining them. He's teaching them. You really want to be in my image? You want to be the son of your Father in heaven? You want the love in you that is in me? You want the maturity? You want to think like me, walk like me, talk like me, love like me, care like me, be conformed to my image? Then I've got to show you where you don't love, you don't care, where you're selfish, where you're arrogant, where you're demanding, where you're hostile, where you're angry. And then it'll come out in these places in life. And he says, either you'll regard it lightly and you'll learn nothing, or secondly, you can just faint. You can just become faint-hearted. In the sense there, you can allow it just to overcome you in such a way that you just faint. You just give up. You just say, I just give up. And usually when we do it, we say, I've tried and tried and tried. Well, we haven't tried, but we say that. You know, but we tried the wrong way. So he just said, what's the use? I give up. I just give up. How many times do we do that? Do we walk out, you know, on somebody and say, oh, you're whatever, or say, and then as we walk out, I give up. I'm exhausted. I'm fainting. You know, this is just, can't go on. And that's also, you can become weary. You can become discouraged here, as he tells us in this text, in discipline, if you don't know what it is all about and respond to the right things in it. Even David, when God was disciplining him, when he was training him, and it was, and he found himself weary in it and discouraged in it. And he said in one of his psalms, he says, why art thou disquieted within me, O my soul? Why have you become disturbed within me? He asked there. He's looking, he's speaking to himself. He says, why are you so down? Why are you exhausted? Why are you weary? Why have you given up? He asked himself that. But then he wonderfully knew the answer. And he turned there and he responds a couple of verses later. He says, hope thou in God. I'll yet praise him. And he'll be the help of my countenance. He looked there and he says, God, you lift me up and you get me back in the battle. Yes, I'm tired and yes, I'm weary, but it's a noble thing life is. And I want to go on with it. I want to succeed at it. And when we can just look at life, at the difficulties of where we're banging heads and where we're struggling and striving and realizing, could this possibly be God's discipline? And could this be God there who's really, it is my husband, my wife, my children, my parents, my job, my career, and all these other things. God, you are what? You, what are you telling me? And when I can step back from that and say, what are you saying? What in the world is it that you're doing? And I don't want to take it lightly. And I don't want to be discouraged. I don't want to faint. I want to learn the lesson. I want to subject myself to it and grow. That's the person that's going to find their whole life, I believe, dramatically affected when we can look there and relieve all the rest of the world, you know, and being mad at the stick that God used to spank us. You know, I remember when first started training, we had a Doberman for years. And when you'd take it and you'd use a newspaper or something there to spank the dog with, well, then when it found the stick or it found whatever you used, you'd tear it up, chew it up. It was so mad at that thing. Look, you caused me the pain, you know, and that I felt there, you know. But rather than wait and know, that was just what was in my hand. I did it. And when somebody can look and say, God, it isn't people. It is my job. It isn't this. You're the one, the sovereign in life. What are you trying to tell me? That person is always going to come out the better for it. Instead of taking it lightly, we determine, I want to seriously look at it. I read a story of a fellow named Lord Joseph Devine. He, back 100 years ago, he owned a very famous art company in New York and went all over the world gathering his things. And in 1915, he sent one of his best experts to go check out some works of art and things for him to England. And so he booked a passage for him on the Lusitania. But soon after that, they found out, after he'd booked the passage, that the German embassy issued a warning that the Lusitania might be torpedoed. Well, Devine gets a hold of his guy, and he says, I can't take the risk of you being killed on this thing, so we're going to hold the trip, that he said to his young employee. But his employee said, no, I already heard about it, and I heard it could be torpedoed, and it could go down. And he said, but he says, don't take me off the ship. He said, I'm a strong swimmer. And he told him, he said, ever since I heard that report, he says, I've been sitting in a barrel of ice every day. And he said, at first I could only do it for a couple of minutes. He says, this morning I sat in it for 2 hours as he disciplined his body. And he says, I'm ready to go. Well, the Lusitania was torpedoed. It did sink. And 5 hours after it sank, the man was in great health in the freezing waters where others had frozen to death. He determined, rather than getting out of the trials in life, out of the difficulties of life, I want to be disciplined for them. And to me, when somebody looks, if somebody there just to go check out a piece of art in England is willing to go through this, how much more should a Christian, when they look at their marriage, they look at their family, they look at the difficulty things that may be out there in life, to say, God, discipline me, equip me to be the one that can go through this and grow in it and stay in it and stand through it, rather than, oh, I can get out of it? How? I don't have to do it? Great. No discipline required? Wonderful. You see, we live in a day and age sometimes where Christianity, we want an exciting life, a rich life, a wonderful spiritual life with no discipline. God, I want to be a great Christian, just no discipline, okay? What do you think? I want a happy, fun Christian life, no trials. Sorry, never invented one of those. Every one of my children, he says here, twice in this, every one of them, a discipline. You see, and it's God's way. He has a plan. He has a program in discipline, but there's also proof of it. He goes on here in verse 6, and he says, for those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. Here he looks there, and he goes on and he says, without discipline, you're illegitimate. You don't even have a father if you don't have any discipline. And he says, but rather than that, everyone that he loves, he disciplines and he scourges. That proves, his son, that I love you. That proves that I'm your father. There's something there within our, as soon as God brought us into his family and adopted us, and we say, God, I want to be like you. He says, okay, he rolls up his sleeves. We got some disciplining to do. We got some work to conform you into my image. And either today, you are in his image. You're filled with his love, his kindness, his gentleness, his patience, his peace. You are literally, you know, nothing difference between you and your heavenly father. You're the same. Or to the degree that you are not is the degree you need to be disciplined. God says, well, I've got to disciple you. You want to be my child? You want to be like me? You want to be in heaven with me forever? You like what you see when you see me? You like that power and that joy and that love? I can do that, but I got to train you. And while others are out partying and doing this and that, I wanted you to be looking at your own heart and your own life. I want you to be equipping yourself. I want you to be praying, seeking me, learning my word. When you see something that's wrong in your life that other people can live with, that you say, you know something, my arrogance or pride or my ability to be nasty and angry and hostile, it's got to go. I got to get that out of my life. Discipline me, God. Teach me not to talk like that, behave like that. I want to have this wonderful relationship with you. I want to have something, a marriage that people look at and admire to say, you two deeply love each other. Say, yes, we do. And along with a few trials along the way, God used us to whip each other and to scourge each other and, to bring some sense into one another at times through these processes, as iron sharpens iron and sandpaper, you know, one against the other. But it's God's obligation to us. He says, because you're my child, I'll discipline you. And because you're my child, I'll train you up. I'll raise you up. Here it says there that he scourges every son. Now, that word scourge, it refers literally there, and this is every single child. God says, you want to be my child? I'm going to discipline you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to scourge you. Now, the word scourge, it's a flogging with a whip. God says, you want to be my child? I'm going to take the whip to you. And if you still want to be my child, you will be scourged. You will be flogged. And it is something that is extremely painful. Sometimes God puts us through things in life, in our relationships, in our home, that are extremely difficult, extremely painful. Will test us sometimes to the limits of our humanity, of where we look there and God says, will you stay the course? Will you stay the standard? Do you want my image so much there as you will go through any pain and struggle you may have to go through? Will you be flogged? Will you be whipped? If that is what it may, you know, feel like. God says, I do that to all my children. Proverbs 13:24 says, he who spares the rod hates his son, and he who loves him disciplines him diligently. God says, I love you, and I will diligently be working in your life, diligently speaking to you. If you really want to be in my image, you really want to grow, I will be working night and day, helping your love grow, your maturity grow, your patience grow, your kindness grow, your tenderness grow, your merciful heart grow. I'll be teaching you all sorts of things about myself. Do you want to learn them or not? And when, as a child, hopefully we sign on and say, yes, I do. But on the other side, Proverbs 29:15 says, you know, a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. Somebody there that God doesn't discipline, just like a parent that doesn't ever discipline their child, they bring shame. And so also I will shame God. My untamed, undisciplined heart or mind, behavior, anger, hostility, lust, you know, envy, it will shame heaven. But when I look there and say, God, I want these things to go. I want you to discipline me. I want to be your son. And none of us, as he says in the text, nobody likes it. Never met anybody. Have you ever met anybody that liked discipline? Have you ever met somebody there, well, like, you know, I got to go home. I'm late already. I told my dad I'd be home 2 hours ago. And, you know, I just really feel bad about this, and I need to go home and get some discipline. You know, this is very undisciplined to me. I told him I'd be home. I lied. And I'm just going to go home and say, Dad, give me a whipping, please. I need it. I mean, I've never met one of those. But yet that's precisely what they need in one way or another, perhaps. And here, you know, I can remember when I was growing up, very well, when we grew up where our neighbors across the street, there was three boys in our family, three boys in their family. Actually, we had my sister as well in ours. They didn't have a sister. But between the six boys, we were all within 6 months of each other. And so there we're like this little gang. And we were all into sports very much, and we did everything like this. And one time, I will never forget this, and this is how it was all the time at their home, though. We're out in the street playing football, and their dad yells at him, hey, mow the lawn. I want you guys to come over and mow the lawn. We're out playing. Oh, you got to go. And one of them turned and yelled back at his dad, mow it yourself. And he did. He mowed it himself. We're watching this thing as he's mowing the lawn. And we're just thinking, is that the coolest dad or what? You know, I mean, why couldn't my dad be like that? Why can't everybody? And no wonder, I mean, this is home. This is family, you know, sort of. This was just to a young kid, you're just envious of this. And we actually talked amongst us, our three boys. Can you, man, is he cool or what? He's the coolest dad in the world. Because we talked. Could you just imagine one of us saying that? My dad comes out and says, you mow the lawn, says, oh, mow it yourself. I mean, to us, that would have been on our tombstone in a week. Famous last words, mow it yourself. And I mean, you wouldn't have even said, mow. Yeah, I mean, somebody says, hey, I'll pay you whatever you want. You say it. It was just something you just knew that was the end. But the thing was, my dad loved us. I had cared, and he looked there at a responsibility. Or the other thing that is possible is he also said in the text here, he says, even your earthly fathers discipline you, and sometimes just for their own mentality. He says, sometimes it's just easier for them. I don't want to mow the lawn. You mow it. But sometimes they say, no, my job is to discipline you. My job is to see your life come under disciplines, because you will have many tendencies through the rest of your life where you'll have an impulse to go on playing in the street when it's time to come home and do your duties. When it is time to be a husband, it's time to be a father, it's time to do other chores in life, that if you do them and do them well, the rewards will be tremendous. But if you keep on playing, you'll lose everything. And here, just through the disciplines, God is looking there in life. And when I'm disciplining you and I'm teaching you and I'm showing you, they will all have an impact later on in the other aspects of your life and of your growth and your maturity. And he says, and then he goes on lastly, and there's some great products and results of discipline. Verse 9, he says, furthermore, you know, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them, yet we not much more rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live. For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. Here he looks there and he says, there's two things here. There's a couple phenomenal rewards for spiritual discipline. when I look there and say, God, I'm here and I'm not going away. Whatever it is you want to do and teach me and scourge me and put me through and teach me perseverance and teach me strength or teach whatever it is, you know, that I've got to learn within this matter. But he looked there and he tells us, he says, there's two great things that'll happen to the person to have it. Number one, you will live. You will live. And it isn't just so much the aspect of your heart keep on beating and the blood keep on flowing through your system. It's an issue there of more the life that you will live. You will have a quality of life. You will have an experience of life. The person that is disciplined in their life spiritually always adds to the dimension of their life, the quality of life, the abundance of life, the power of life, the victory of life, the rest of life, the love of life, the joy of their existence on the planet. It is magnified by their disciplines. Isn't it true with every one of us? When you look at the best places in your life right now are the areas of life where you're disciplined. Your discipline, those are the ones where you're the best discipline. That's where, you know, everything else is in trial. I'm going to work. I'm good at work. You know, or when I'm disciplined, I can produce something. Or I'm going to the office. I don't know how to handle this thing, but we retreat to our disciplines so often. But what embarrasses us is the undisciplined area. The area there where we can handle it, or we, our own, the undisciplined areas of life, when there's something that happens that we know we shouldn't do something, but we're not disciplined enough to not do it. You know, there's tension in the home, and we, you know, there's some, there, this little lady needs to hear a word or two. She needs a piece of information from me. Yes, she does. And there's a voice inside that says, no, you don't want to do that. Oh, you don't think so? Watch this. And you do it. And 2 minutes later, you're dead. It's over. You're going out. What happened? The quality of life is diminished terribly. But here he says, a discipline, you will live. If there is something there that when God says, get out of the street and quit playing and go mow the lawn. Go handle this. Go do what it is that you are there to do. Stop talking about it or feeling bad about it or say, you know, I should have done it. James, in the book of James, he talks about the man who beheld himself in a mirror. But when he walked away, he forgot what manner of man he saw. There was something about us. We have this great capacity to sit there and hear the word and to hear God's love and to know it's there and says, I want to help you. I want to see you live. I want to see you, you know, there. Stop being mad at the person and this and that and the stick that I spanked you with. I want you to turn to me. And I want, don't regard that lightly, you know, what's going on there. Turn to me and say, God, are you teaching me something? In my home, in my marriage, in my life, in my walk, something there. He said, if we can do that, and then we walk away and we remember what we heard and we apply it to our lives. There's the person that's changed. But the one that can end week after week, month after month, year after year, go through the same lesson. Yeah, the old lady's mad at me again. Oh, boy. Oh, well, who knows? Gone on forever. Who cares? That's the person that's never been disciplined. But the one where the tension is and they can go off and say, Lord, is there anything I can do to help this anger in the home? Anything you can teach me of your spirit, of your life, my behavior, discipline me, teach me. If a man can sit in ice just to go look at a piece of art, you know, I'd help me to sit through this thing so till I hear you and I learn something. And grow. And then one day, because I want to live. And then the second thing and the last thing we'll look at today that he promises, he says that not only that we'll live, but he says that we may share his holiness. There's two things that God is doing within life. And that is God, he wants to increase my relationships with you. He wants with people. He wants to strengthen the marriage, strengthen the love, strengthen the home, strengthen the relationship, build them and make them deep. But in the process, the only way it gets done is when these things are under pressure and going through difficulty, I can turn and say, God, will you help me? And through that, I learn a greater dependence and faith in him. And I'm drawn into holiness. All that holiness is sharing the life of God. That's all it is. All the word means. Holiness is separation unto God. Sanctified, set apart for God. God has designed life in such a way, so you want a better life here? It requires being set apart for me. You want, you, because then I will give you all you need to do this. God has just kind of linked the two together. You'll never go deeper with one than you're willing with the other. And when I'm sitting there saying, God, I want to go deep with you, then he says, well, if you mean that, then we're going to deal with your relationships here. Somebody once said, oh, so-and-so is so heavenly-minded, he's no earthly good. Not possible. Anybody that is heavenly-minded is earthly good. The most heavenly-minded person there ever was on this planet was Jesus himself. And the person of the greatest earthly good was the same. And so also, when I'm looking there and saying, God, I want to go deep with you, then he says, okay, here they are. Here's the battles. Here's the struggles. Here's the things where you'll have to learn love, learn kindness, learn gentleness, learn patience, cap the anger, you know, bury the old nature, die to yourself. You'll be conformed to my image. You still want it. And when somebody looks and says, yes, with all my heart, that's what I'm alive for. What else is there? And that's what the Christian life is. And it's a word today, unfortunately, discipline. It's kind of like, who wants to hear the word discipline? It's kind of like your fingers on a chalkboard. You know, oh, man. But to the person who is succeeding in life, it's the exact opposite. They look there and say, you know, every blessing that lasts and continues and thrives in my life is where God had to teach me, discipline me, put me through things, show me my inability, show me my incapacity. And rather than blaming it on the stick, blaming it on the husband, blaming it on the wife, blaming it on the child, blaming it on this, chewing up that stick like a mad dog who's just mad that he did something, doesn't know care or what. But the one there that looks and says, God, you're sovereign. Speak to me. Speak to me. Because everything you teach me, you'll give me the power to do. You'll give me the love. You'll give me the strength. God, give me a greater love, greater patience. And in the process of this, the danger, as I said when we began, is you can grow weary. You know, the person who aims at nothing doesn't grow weary in tribulation and trial. But the one that looks there and says, I want the best, the one there, that the athlete that keeps on working, the student that keeps on burning the midnight oil, they can grow weary. But here the writer of Hebrews says, but it's the noblest reason to be alive. And when you one day wake up and you've got life and you've got holiness, say, wow, it was worth every day of it. Amen.